Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and as always, we are going to be making the airwaves really pop this morning. What are we going to be talking about? Well, we're going to be talking about taxes, the big T. And it's going to be about you as an individual if you're self-employed. My guest this morning is Mr. James O. Parker. And Mr. Parker, welcome.
I appreciate it.
It's been just a pleasure looking forward to talking with you. Of course, most people would say, Donna, you've got to be kidding. Talking about taxes, no way is that a pleasure. You're in Germantown, Tennessee, and you have been very much involved with taxes for a lot of years, over 25, and you also are an educator at Christian Brothers University in Memphis, Tennessee. And you're a small business owner yourself, and you wrote this book, Tax Power for the Self-Employed, Straightforward Advice from an Expert. Do you mind if I call you James?
Oh, that's fine.
All right. James, I wanted to ask you something. Why is it that you felt that it was so important to educate people regarding taxes for the self-employed?
Well, before I answer that question, I will say this. I think your listeners, who I may well call viewers before I'm all said and done, I think that probably is a throwback to the days when folks in this part of the country used to sit around and watch the radio when they listened to it. But in any event, I think that they owe you a certain debt of gratitude because you're talking about taxes at the right time of the year. Invariably, when I've done similar types of interviews in the past, it's always come during the tax season. Well, it's over by that time. So if you want to talk about, well, what can we do about this or that, or how can we plan for something, you don't do it on April the 3rd. You do it in July or maybe even before that. What made me write this book? Well, actually, I had another book that I wrote before this one that is called Tax Smarts for Small Business. And in talking with the editor of that particular book, and also having written it and having seen a certain amount of what I put on paper for that book get discarded, we pretty much decided that there was another book in there that probably more people would even be interested in than in the Tax Smarts for Small Business. The truth of the matter is the Small Business Administration says that there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 23 million small businesses in the country, but over 15 million of them are self-employed people who are basically sole proprietors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot has happened in our country in a relatively short time. There are more people now who are employed in the so-called small business in the private sector in the United States than are employed in what we consider to be large companies. That's a recent phenomenon. Of the new jobs that are being created over the last several years, between two-thirds and three-quarters of the new jobs have come from small business. And in many cases, we're talking about that sole proprietor, that person who cranked up their own concern. And I guess with things like the Internet and the like, that's pretty feasible to do because even without a bricks-and-mortar location, you can get off the ground and appear to have a pretty impressive operation going. And so more and more of this is going on. And I might add that now more women are starting new businesses than men.
That is a phenomena that I think is evolving because there are more and more mature women that are finding that this is what they want to do. The younger women often are involved in school and other and with families, and so they have an interest. But I think women, as they're getting into their 40s and 50s, many opportunities that would have been available to them just aren't there now. So here they are wanting to go into business, and many of them are enjoying a great deal of success. And, of course, they're going to be dealing with self-employed taxation. And let's break down the self-employment tax versus the FICA tax.
Okay. The FICA tax, which basically is broken down into two components. You have what they call OASDI which is old age survivors and disability insurance. That's what we think of when we think in terms of Social Security. That's the tax that's collected to pay your Social Security benefits. It also pays things like if a parent dies, then the surviving parent may be able to draw money to provide for the surviving children, that sort of thing. Or if you become disabled, then you can get benefits in that fashion. Then there's also the Medicare portion that goes, just as the name says, to cover the Medicare insurance, to cover health care mostly for older people. And the way that FICA tax is set up, the employer pays an equal amount that the employee pays. It's 7.65% each. Now, it's not paid on the entire earnings. There's a limit that is set each year. In 06, it's $94,200. And what they do when they adjust it is they look at what percentage the average income has changed in the country. So, in other words, they're not saying the average person makes $94,200.
Mm-hmm.
In Tennessee, for instance, the median income's a little under $34,000. But if that median income were to go up, say, 4% on the average in the country, then that $94,200 would go up 4%. So then after that, it drops off, and the OASDI portion is no longer charged, and only the Medicare part is collected, and that has no limit. Now, the self-employment tax is what self-employed individuals pay in lieu of FICA tax. The self-employment tax is set up at a nominal rate of 15.3%. And I see many instances in which people who are self-employed pay substantially more money in self-employment tax than they do in income tax. And the reason is simple. The self-employment tax starts with pretty much the first dollar that the person earns as a self-employed individual. Now, there's a provision that if you don't earn more than $400 in a year, you don't have to pay it. But if you've made enough that you are going to have to pay it, even that first $400 is subject to the self-employment tax. With income tax, we will have either itemized deductions or a standard deduction, and we'll have our exemptions, and we get to take those off before we start to apply the tax rates. And then there's a 10% rate and a 15% rate, and then it goes up with a 25 and on up the line until it finally hits 35% as a maximum, which obviously is more than 15.3. But in order for it to hit the 35, you've got to make a pretty good bit of income. And as I say, with the self-employment tax, there's no exemption or deduction equivalent.
Now, you make a statement in your book that the tax is actually a regressive tax.
Well, sure it is, because think about it just a minute. If I made, say, $250,000, then I'm going to wind up paying my 15.3% on the first $94,200. Then after that, on everything over $94,200, I'm going to pay 2.9%. So if we took the percentage that I paid overall on my $250,000 and compared it to someone who made, say, $50,000, they're going to pay 15.3% on the whole $50,000. So I'm going to pay a smaller percentage of tax if I'm a high-income earner in self-employment tax than the person who's a relatively low or more moderate income earner.
For those of you just tuning into the show, we're talking with James O. Parker, who is from Tennessee. He has this wonderful book called Tax Power for the Self-Employed. And this is a passion that he's been involved with for a number of years. And so he wants you to know how you can maximize your deductions, establish your retirement plan, defer capital gains, qualify for a home office, avoid audits. All of these points we're going to touch on. I would like, James, to touch on something, hobby income and loss. There are people that are in business. Sometimes they have a business that maybe goes on for 4, 5, 7 years, and then all of a sudden it starts making a profit. What is the difference between a hobby income in what might be classified as a sole proprietorship business?
Well, the situation is this. If you're going to make a profit on it, it probably isn't going to really make much difference. Because even though the hobby income is subject, even if you consider it hobby income, it is subject to being taxed. And for you to say, well, gee, that was just my hobby, is not impressive. In fact, there are a lot of misconceptions out there. I've run into people who would say stuff like, when maybe I'd be doing their tax return or something like that, and they would say, well, yeah, you know, I do some bookkeeping work for people, but that's just where I get my spending money, and so we just don't count that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm afraid we do, because it's still income. And so where there is a big difference in the two, although I will say this, if you make money from a hobby, since it's not considered to be a business, then I don't believe it should be subject to self-employment tax. And so it actually may even be that if an IRS auditor wanted to characterize income that you were earning as hobby income, that you might even profit from saying, oh, okay, that's fine with me. But where you really tend to wrangle with the IRS over it is when you have a loss, because you can take deductions for the expenses that you incur for your hobby only to the extent of the income you receive from that hobby.
Now, you bring up something that was a new term for me. It's phantom income.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, the unfortunate problem is this, in part due to ignorance, and I don't mean that in an unkind way, I mean just lack of familiarity with the tax laws, and sometimes due to circumstances, people will have income that they didn't even dream that they were having. For instance, I had a client who was in business, and there were several owners, and the decision was made that a couple of them would buy out one of the owners. And the way that they proposed to do it was that that person would transfer his ownership interest to the other two, and they, in turn, would pay him over time from the profits of the business. Now, in their mind, they thought, no problem, we'll just write this man his check and treat it as if he still worked here.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, he didn't. So he didn't have any earned income. And so when they went to see their CPA and have him do their taxes, and they explained what had happened, then he rightfully treated it in this fashion. He said, look, you may not realize you did it, but you earned that income yourself that you paid this man you bought out.
Mm-hmm.
And even though you never paid it to yourself, it's going to be attributed to you. And then you turned around and paid it to that person that you bought out. Now, you didn't actually physically write the check. You collapsed the transaction and short-circuited it a bit and simply said to the person who was the payroll clerk, write this man his check. But the reality of the transaction, when you dissect it, is you had the earnings, then you had them paid over to him. You assigned it, basically. And so what's going to have to happen is that income that you had paid to that person is now going to be attributed to you. It's going to be reported out from this, it was a subchapter S corporation, on a K-1, they call it, a form that says who made what money, what owners made what money out of a business. And now you're going to have to pay tax on that. And this person, in turn, rather than treat this as a salary that he got or a consulting fee or something along those lines, what he's going to have to do now is he will report it as a capital gain.
Hello, Donna. This is Janine from Stanwood, Washington.
Oh, excuse me. We have got someone that is somehow or another is a caller that's come in. Caller, could you call back in about 15 minutes?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you very much, dear. Somehow or another, the phone lines got crossed here. I wanted to have you finish what you were saying.
Sure. But here's the point with this phantom income situation. Here sat this poor guy, and he was saying, I don't understand this. I got a K-1 that said I made $36,000. Where is it? I didn't get 36 cents. Well, no, you didn't physically get it. You had it diverted to the man you bought out. but because it accrued to your benefit, as now you had two owners, each owning 50%, which you had then assigned to this other person, you're going to have to pay tax. And he didn't have it because his tax liability on that $36,000 was over $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so he literally wound up having to go and borrow money to pay his taxes. Now, the bad news is that he was then having to pay that money back, and the same thing was happening in year two and three and four. And I think the arrangement went on for 7 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So, see, he was really struggling for quite a period with this problem with these taxes.
Now, how could he be done? What would have been the best way for him to have handled this?
Well, there are a couple of ways that things can be handled. On the one hand, perhaps they should have gone and borrowed the money and bought the guy out and then had a bank loan they were paying back.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been one possibility, perhaps. And maybe they could have then stretched those payments over a longer time or then made it more palatable. Big thing is they needed to know it was coming and prepare for it, I think.
So they really should have had the time to sit down with a tax advisor relative to running this business rather than just doing it with a convenient arrangement as it seems, so that they should talk to someone who is, like yourself, a tax specialist.
It would have made a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Also, too, now, we can, and I see this happen from time to time. Let's say that we have a person who wants to sell out their business, and you say, okay, fine, let's do this. We will pay you a certain amount for the business, but at the same time, we want to retain your services as a consultant. Then when we pay that money to that person who bona fide is rendering services now, we can't just say they're a consultant and mail them a check when they never do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we can contract with them to say, you have got to make yourself available, meet with us periodically, go over things with us, whatever it is that you need to do, maybe even make some calls on some longtime customers, whatever may be involved that would be beneficial to the business. And then that way, those payments to that person for that service would truly be tax deductible to the business. It wouldn't be attributable income to these remaining owners. And the person who's selling out might even like retaining some involvement in the company. And in that fashion, then, of course, they would have to report it as a salary or as a consulting fee as an
mm-hmm.
independent contractor, and they probably are going to have to pay self-employment tax on it. But be that as it may, that's a way that might make it a bit more palatable for the people doing the buying to be able to handle those payments.
There are so many variables when you are in business, and the tax system is always changing. And one of the hottest, biggest areas of confusion, in my awareness, is relative to the in-home office expense deductions. There have been so many situations that have been so uncomfortable for people because often they start out with just a space. It seems like it's about the size of a shoebox because they're starting off on their own. They've just got this little tiny area, and then they start growing and expanding. What are some of the things that, when we're looking at an in-home office, what are the tax laws today? How have they changed when you're doing work out of your home?
Well, I don't know that they have particularly changed, but at the same time, I don't know that the typical person has necessarily ever understood them. The situation, as I see it first and foremost, is this. I'm not so sure that it's always such a good idea to take them, because some law that affects the write-off, not directly but somewhat indirectly, may not make it so desirable. And here's what I mean by that. For years, it used to be that if we had a home and we sold it, that we would have to pay tax on any gain that we made. And, of course, real estate's been going up just almost all over the country, probably out in your part of the country more so than ours, for
mm-hmm.
us. But so the deal was, hey, if you'll go buy another house as your primary residence within a certain time period, couple of years, then you can roll over the gain into your other house and avoid having to pay the tax. Well, Congress took action and made this a much more appealing proposition, because now if you live in a residence and you have lived there for two out of the last 5 years and you sell that at a gain, A single person, someone filing their return as a single person, can take a $250,000 exclusion of the gain. You don't have to buy anything else with the money. It's just yours. And then you can go buy you another house if you want to, and in a five-year period, live there at least two and all that. So really all you would need would be buy another one, stay there 2 years, and you can have another fat gain that you can walk away with. Married couples filing jointly, it can be $500,000. However, to the degree that you've taken write-offs for an in-home office, you don't get to do that. You have to recapture that write-off and pay taxes on it. So honestly, I'm not as thrilled about the in-home office deduction for the person who is the homeowner and is going to be able to take advantage of that exclusion as I might otherwise be. Now, if you live in, say, an apartment where you don't have that issue where you can have some gain you're going to make, then that's a different story, and you're not going to have to have a payback, so to speak, on the back end of it. But the primary thing to bear in mind is that the use generally has to be exclusive. Now, there are some exceptions, like if you're running a daycare in your house and it doesn't have to be exclusive. You could use that part of your house that you used for the daycare for your family mm-hmm. after hours and still take write-offs and so on, but obviously there aren't many people that are doing that. But generally, if you're going to have an office in your home, then it has to truly be exclusive use. And it can be the kind of thing that if you set up a room, like let's say you converted a dining room into an office space, and then at Thanksgiving you cleaned it out and had a big dinner, you just disqualified yourself from the write-off.
Lots of important information that we perhaps don't always have an awareness of. And, of course, your book, Tax Power for the Self-Employed, is so important. It's straightforward advice from an expert. James O. Parker has been involved with taxation and helping people get unscrambled from their scrambled-up situations they get involved with, because there is a lot to be aware of. And if you're in business for yourself, you are so occupied with just taking care of that business that often we push the consideration and concerns about taxes to the side. So it's always good having someone that you can talk with, like James Parker. James, we have so much information in here regarding non-business deductions, deductions from adjusted gross income. You cover so many different subject matter, exemptions. Let's go into that aspect, the exemptions. We have so many people today who are living a lot longer, and they want to be able to gift to members of the family. Maybe they have a sizable estate, and they don't want to have to worry about giving it all away afterwards, and they want to gift something to their children, their grandchildren, or whomever. Are there certain rules and regulations regarding exemptions for dependents, where if you had a large amount of money and you wanted to do this, or you wanted to gift them every year, can you do that? What are the rules with that?
Well, in this particular case, the exemptions that I'm referring to would be the exemption that a person gets to exclude from their taxable income each year for their dependents. So that would be things like a husband and wife each get an exemption for themselves when they file a joint return. If they have children, if they had three kids, they would get three more exemptions. And that's not a matter of did I give them money, and that money is now excluded from, say, an estate and gift tax. Now, we do have estate taxes that are very much alive and kicking that we levy against estates. But we've got a really peculiar situation right now, because what they're doing is the law steadily increases the amount that we can pass on to our heirs other than a spouse. Bear in mind, we can leave a spouse as much as we want, billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no estate tax at the federal level, which sounds like kind of a whoopee, home-free type proposition. But all you do is you just stack it all into the hands of the surviving spouse, and then the government taxes the fool out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the smart people go, well, wait a minute. If I get to exclude a certain amount to a non-spouse and I've got enough to go around, then let me go ahead and give a certain amount over here to my kids, or put it in a trust where mama or dad can draw, the survivor can draw what they can in the way of income. In fact, they must take the income out, and then we'll let the remainder of the trust pass on to the corpus of it, pass on to the kids or nephews or whoever they have in mind whenever that second spouse dies. But in the year 2010, we're going to have no estate tax in this country.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, it's going to go where you absolutely can leave whatever you want to leave with no estate tax whatsoever on the federal level. Then in 2011, it's going to be where anything over $1 million gets taxed because they have a sunset provision in the law.
Oh, my goodness.
See? Now, most people who are in the tax profession are of the opinion that it ain't going to stay that way. They for one thing, and I think very much this way, it seems rather a little much to me to say, well, we want to be sure that somebody who's a multi-billionaire can pass his money on to his kids so they can hire people to write their term papers when they're in college or something, while some little lady in Hoboken has to decide, do I take my diabetes medicine or do I take my heart medicine because I can't afford both. I mean, I think our priorities would say that it's not offensive to tax a pretty large estate and use that money to help people who need it. But at the same time, we've imposed some of these estate taxes on some small businesses, for instance, where they were owners of the small businesses, and they literally are sitting there saying, I guess we're going to have to liquidate the business to pay the tax on it. And so I think what's probably going to happen is, although Congress has wrestled with this some and they can't seem to reach an agreement, but I think that as we get nearer to this situation, that what they're going to probably do is say, let's set up some sort of a pretty stout maximum amount that we can pass over without tax, like $3, $4, $5 million, and then the rest of it gets taxed, and let's let it go with that.
Well, yeah. As you can tell, keeping up with taxes is a full-time job, and that's what Mr. James Parker is doing. That is what he is all about, and that's what his book, Tax Power for the Self-Employed, is all about. It's straightforward advice from a man who really knows his tax stuff. James Parker, thank you so much for being my guest. It's been absolutely a pleasure, and I know you told me that you don't have a website that people can go to for tax information. We've got about a minute. Do you have any other reference that you would like to suggest to people if they want to find out more information? Your book is outstanding, Tax Power for the Self-Employed. That is what I would recommend to them first, but is there another area or another website that might work for them?
Well, I will mention this. As I say, the Tax Power for the Self-Employed, Tax Smarts for Small Business, I've just recently gone through. We'll have second editions of both of these books out in the fall. I do have another book that came out, I guess it was in January, that's called The Weekend Real Estate Investor, that basically tries to kind of steer people down the right path and say, let's forget all the hype on TV. Here's what you really need to do if you want to try and come out investing in real estate. And also has a pretty significant tax advice section in it. And then also in the fall, I have another one coming out that will be for advising people who have been selected for audit by the IRS.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you've just got to keep up with Mr. James Parker. But for today, we'll talk tax power for the self-employed, and I want to thank you for being my guest.
Well, it was my pleasure.
It's absolutely a delight. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be going on a break. We'll be coming back in just a moment. Lots of good things to share. Phone lines are open, 877-876-5227. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. And if you would like to call in and chat with me today, hey, go ahead and do that. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. We've got a caller on the line right now. And welcome to the show, caller. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Janine, and I'm calling you from Stanwood, Washington.
from Stanwood, Washington.
Yeah.
Well, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Janine, I'm watching something in my mind that is causing me a little bit of concern because I'm observing that you seem to be trying to go into too many different directions, and I am feeling as if I'm sinking, or maybe the better word would be drowning. And I'm saying, I know that I'm getting into trouble, but I don't see a life preserver handy. Well, take a deep breath and just pull in, and I think you're going to float through this sense of being overwhelmed. I'm watching you with concern because there seems to be such a sense of obligation on your part. It's as if you feel you owe someone, and if you don't carry the load, everything's going to fall apart. And I want to tell you that's not the case. I really feel that this is a very significant time of learning for you. And one of the lessons that you're learning is that you don't have to bear other people's responsibilities. And you need to be able to let go so you can float, if you will, and not feel as if you're drowning. It is so important, and there's such a deep sense of responsibility and commitment that you have, and it goes so far down inside of you. And I just want to encourage you to be aware of the fact you must be able to make it okay that you don't carry other people's stuff. You've got some wonderful opportunities for traveling. There's a couple of seminars that are going to be available to you this year. You may wonder if you're going to have the budget for it. My answer is yes. I think that there's going to be an opportunity for you to be able to pull in those monies that you need. And maybe you're going to be able to volunteer also so that you'd be able to be a participant and not have the high expenses that would come with actually being just the straight paying consumer for the seminar. But there's a lot of options for you to consider. I'm just seeing you towards the end of the year absolutely expanding mentally in wonderful, wonderful ways and really realizing that 2007 is going to be your breakthrough year, big time, in big ways. What question do you have for me?
One word, EcoQuest.
One word, and would you repeat that again?
EcoQuest.
EcoQuest. Well, now that's a word. What is the question?
The question is that, you're right, I have too many different things on the fire, and that being one of them, it is a business. Do you feel that this, I guess, should I drop it or stick it? Stick with it.
Well, what kind of business is it? My first impression is neither. It's like, don't drop it, and it's not really going to be that big. So what is it that this is involving?
We manufacture very, very high-end, by high-tech, air purification and environmental solutions.
All right. What you have got here is something that it will take you a while to really thoroughly understand. I feel that this is something that has good value. I don't know that you're in the position at this time to really give it what I would say 75 to 80% of your time. I don't see you having it.
You're right.
I would like for you to consider something. I would like you to not drop it, but look at it from a point of learning. Don't try to make it an either or. You've just got too many other things going on, hon.
I understand.
So you need to sift out some of the stuff.
Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad. How did you learn about the show?
Actually, I've called you before.
Oh-ho.
One of the things on my plate is you told me to write a book.
Uh-huh. Have you written it yet?
I'm 95 pages in.
Hey, congratulations.
But it's one of those things that, you know.
Too many other things distracting you, right?
Doing all kinds of things distracting, yes.
Well, Janine, you be wise and take care of yourself.
All righty. Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And speaking, Janine is calling in from Stanwood, Washington. For those of you who are listening in the Washington area, you've got to know about the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. I mean, this is an event that I've been participating in for years. You're going to hear me talking about it every day, even through the month of August, because it is one of the most fabulous events you could ever want to go to. And I get to dress up and be in costume, and it's so much fun. I just absolutely love it. I'm called Lady Donna when I attend there. It's just absolutely great. Now, if you're out of the state of Washington, you may want to fly in. A lot of people fly in from all over the country to attend this wonderful, wonderful event. You can go to their website, Washington Ren Fair. That's Washington, RENSAIRE.com. And you can get all kinds of information. And what are the dates of this wonderful event? Well, it's the first three weekends in August. It's the 5th, 6th, 12th, 13th, 19th, and 20th. It's out at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor, Washington. Now, if you go to their website, you're going to be able to get discounted rates and faster service at the gate. When you get there, you're not going to have to stand in this humongous line. So what you want to do is go to their website, Washington Ren Fair. Don't forget to put the E on the end of the word fair, Washington Ren Fair. And you can print your own tickets out, pay for them, save a lot of dollars. And if you want more information, they've got an 800 number, 359-5948. 3 weekends of fabulous family fun. The kids have an absolutely awesome time. And you've got all kinds of animals, all kinds of activities that are going on. 8 stages of entertainment. It is fabulous. And I'm going to be there. Look for my booth. It's got bright yellow banners with red lions on them, and they are just very visible. And so I'll be right on Main Street there in the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. So if you have a chance to come by and say hello, I would just be delighted to meet you. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are open. The telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. It's toll-free, and if you'd like to call in the way Janine did, just call in, give me your first name or initial, and we will be able to give you information, or I should say I would. I'd be delighted if you're alive with a little bit of insight. Now, I thought I would give out a recipe today that's so wonderful. No, it's not going to be another sauerkraut recipe. This one's going to be chocolate pretzels. It's going to be to appeal to your sweet tooth. And it makes about 30 of these wonderful pretzels, and they're just so easy to fix. And the ingredients, phooey, it's just hardly any. All you're going to need is a half a cup of sweet butter, 7 tablespoons of superfine sugar, 7 tablespoons of superfine sugar, 1 egg, 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/4 cup of unsweetened cocoa, 1/4 cup of unsweetened cocoa, and then if you want to decorate them, you can have a little bit of butter, 1 tablespoon of butter, 3.5 ounces of dark chocolate, and confectionery sugar to dust it. That's 1 tablespoon of butter, 3.5 ounces of dark chocolate, and some confectionery sugar to dust. Okay, this is what you do. You lightly grease a cookie sheet and set it aside, and what you want to do is beat together your 1/2 cup of sweet butter and 7 tablespoons of superfine sugar until it's light and fluffy. And then you add in the eggs. So just let that mixer mix for you. Then when that's all done, you sift together the flour, the unsweetened cocoa, and gradually beat in to the butter-sugar-egg mixture, and it'll form a very soft dough. And what you want to do, you want to use your fingers to incorporate the last of the flour and bring the dough together. And then what you do after the dough is all ready, you chill it for 15 minutes in the refrigerator. And you can just wrap that up in some saran wrap if you want, and that'll be just fine, plastic wrap. Then you want to, when it's after 15 minutes, you want to take the dough out, and you want to break the dough into small pieces and roll them into thin sausage shapes, about 4 inches long and about 1/4 inch thick. And you're going to then twist them into pretzel shapes by first making a circle and then twisting the ends through each other to form a letter B. Then you'll take those pretzels that you put together, put them on the prepared cookie sheet, slightly space them apart. You need to allow some room for spreading during the cooking. And this makes about 30 chocolate pretzels. And you're going to bake them in a preheated oven at about 375 degrees for about 8 to 12 minutes. You've got to watch them because it depends on how hot your oven gets. I mean, sometimes with my oven, I have to put things at a lower temperature to make them turn out right. It's just the idiosyncrasy of my oven, so you have to know yours, too. Then you want to allow the pretzels to cool slightly on the cookie sheet and then transfer it to a wire rack to cool completely. Now, once they're cool, of course you're going to want to decorate them. Then, while they're cooling, you can melt your butter and chocolate. Remember, that was a tablespoon of butter and 3.5 ounces of dark chocolate in a double boiler, and you just stir it until it blends really well. Then what you want to do is take your cooled chocolate pretzels and dip half of them into the melted chocolate and allow the excess chocolate to drip back into the bowl, and then, of course, place the pretzels on a sheet of baking parchment and just allow that chocolate to set. And the baking parchment is perfect because then nothing will stick. And when it's set, then you can dust the non-chocolate coated part of each pretzel with the confectionery sugar just before you serve it. Oh, they're so pretty. And what a surprise. Who would ever expect you to come up with these delicious chocolate pretzels? Perfect to satisfy that taste bud of yours that just absolutely craves chocolate. And this will be something entirely new. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, those phone lines are still open. If you would like to call in and chat with me, dial 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. When we come back, more good stuff to share with you, so don't go away. We won't be long. This is Donna Sebo. Welcome, welcome. If you want to chat with me today, 877-876-5227. Of course, you can call me at any time, 877-876-5227, and I'll be happy to take your call. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I'll give you my mental impressions. I do want to let you know about the guests that are going to be coming on. Well, how about tomorrow? We're going to be talking with Murray Oxman, how to deal with difficult people. Have you ever encountered one? Yes, I think we all do. Sometimes we just feel so overwhelmed with them, we just don't know what to do. Well, Murray's going to straighten us out on that issue. And then next week, we've got some fun things that are going to be coming up. Just who do you think you are? Isn't that an interesting title for a book? Well, Alan Mesher is going to be my guest, and he's going to tell us who we think we are really is significant. Laura King, we're going to be talking about the power to win. And this woman is dynamite. She has just got so much good information to share. If you're into organic food and you want to know about the industry, well, we're going to be talking with Samuel Fromarts. He is a man that's been directly involved with the industry for a long time. And then Wisdom's Game, Judy Thomas, is going to be with us. We're going to be talking about insights in a different way. And then Sam Ulano. He's 87 years young, and he has a book called Keep Swingin'. So we're going to really have a wonderful time with Sam. He's America's drumchiatrist. he's just so much fun. And then we're also, on the last day of the month, we're going to be talking about homeopathy. So we've got some delightful subject matters that I know that you're going to enjoy listening to these areas of interest with some fascinating people who have made these points a passion for themselves. Now, I want to remind you again, don't forget the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. Yes, because it is coming up. Boy, before we know it, we're going to be in August in the first three weekends of the month. This wonderful event is going on at the Mentor Creek Ranch, and all you have to do is go into their website, the Washington Ren Fair, FAIRE.com, and I'll tell you, it is exciting. It is so exciting. You will have the King and Queen's Court that will be there, and everybody's in costume, including myself. I just absolutely love it because there is so much to see and so much to learn. You're going to have craftsmen that are showing you how things were made during the Renaissance. There are the wandering minstrels. There's performers of all types. One of my favorite characters is this guy up on stilts. He must be at least 12 feet up in the air. He's just incredible. And we have the, well, we call her the Mud Lady. And she is just a beggar lady that is typical of what many of those people look like then. All kinds of costumes, gnomes and elves and fairies, just wonderful, wonderful people. So you can go to WashingtonRenFair.com, get your tickets at a discounted rate, and you'll be able to print them out, and you'll get through the gate a lot quicker than all the people standing in line. So do yourself a favor and do that. That is going to be out at the Mentor Creek Ranch. For those of you in Washington, if you're in another part of the country, just go to their website if you want to come into the area to have a part of this wonderful action. We have people come in from all over the country. It is an event not to be missed. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Did you know that the Earth had a fourth dimension? Mm-hmm. I learned about this, and it was a surprise. Are you aware that what you weigh may be one weight in one part of the Earth, but not everywhere else? Well, the reason for that is because Earth is not a perfect sphere. In fact, they have discovered that the pull of gravity is stronger in some places than in others, and it's always in flux, always changing. It's moving with the Earth's mantle, the falling sea levels, and even storms affect gravity. Now, there is an organization called the Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment Mission, and it's got a nickname. Convenient, because that's really a mouthful to say. It's called GRACE. Now, GRACE was launched in 2002 by NASA and the German Aerospace Center to figure out exactly how what goes up must come down. So gravity is one of their issues. And they said before they implemented this program, scientists had only a vague idea of what Earth's gravity map might look like. And I've got a picture of it in front of me. It really looks weird. The Earth doesn't look round at all. It's got all kinds of little lumps and bumps where you wouldn't expect them to be. Well, they found out that the tiniest rises and dips in Earth's gravity push GRACE's two identical satellites together or pull them apart. That's right, they've got satellites mapping all of this stuff, generating a map so precise it can chart monthly changes in Earth's crust and seasonal ocean currents. Fascinating stuff. And they say, you know, things that go up a tad in England. If you throw something up in the air in London, England, it falls faster than it does in Athens. I wonder what Newton would think about that. After all, he was evaluating apples falling off of trees, wasn't he? Well, apparently there is a difference with gravity. And it's just amazing. And apparently annual flooding increases and decreases the gravity of the Amazon basin. And GRACE, this program, is sensitive enough to measure rainfall. It also helps scientists understand how climate changes affect the rainy season. Isn't it amazing what we're able to do today? Just gives us whole new perspectives, and I use the plural because that's what it's all about. Well, my goodness, we're all out of time. Tomorrow, we're going to find out how to deal with difficult people, but remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. Don't make your life difficult. Enjoy your moment. Enjoy the now, because it is the grace of your life when you can appreciate where you are and who you are. I think you're pretty special. And I'm so glad you join me every day. This is Donna Siebel. Have a great one. We'll be talking with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.